Good morning to you, Adam.
Was that, were you trying to be funny or yes. Did it just come out incorrectly?
Well, you had a blank look on your face looking at the screen. I wanted to get your attention. So I did that with a slip of the tongue on purpose.
Right. Just 6 degrees coming in this morning. It's quite cold.
Brisk.
Crisp. But it is going to get to 19 today. It's a very similar weather to yesterday, but 19, that's a warm number for one of the last days of autumn. 19?
Yes. 19. 19!
I must confess.
It's good dog walking weather, 19.
Yes.
It's perfect dog walking weather. Yeah. What do you mean? Why do you dismiss it like that?
Well, I don't like walking dogs.
It's good. Get your steps up.
Yeah, I don't need a dog to do that.
Well, it's helpful because, you know, it's actually two birds with one stone. Mm. It's an efficient use of time.
Mm.
The dogs get their exercise. You get your steps up. Everyone's a winner. You don't have to do separate entries in your diary.
Right.
It makes sense.
Well, if you have them, yes.
Well, you've got two.
Yeah, but they don't get walked.
Why do they? They need to be walked. They need activity. They've got
plenty of room for activity. And they're not very big. You just take the batteries out of our dogs. You put them... Oh, jeez, they're annoying. Anyway. No, last night as well.
What happened last night?
Just they'd make too much noise.
Why? They're
barking.
They're familiar.
Possums and whatnot. It's just annoying. Anyway.
These aren't new dogs. These are familiar dogs. What are you doing, man?
So, it was interesting because obviously we met this morning at, probably about 10 to 4, caught to 4.
Yeah, it was very early. I was a bit early
for our gym session. But just seeing the amount of people that in the cold weather are still going for a run. Like, it's in the dark, 4 or 5 degrees, going for a run. I admire those people.
Exercise doesn't stop. I mean, we're out there doing our thing.
Yeah, but we were in the warmth of a gymnasium. Yeah, so, true, you know, we've got the heater on and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, have a shower afterwards in separate cubicles and, you know, where it's all really warm and, you know, we're fine. But
I nearly popped in this morning. Just a second. See if you're missing me, need some company.
Anyway, I just was thinking that this morning that I reckon I saw about five people that were running at a very early in the morning, and one of them I thought was a fox running across the right road. It was this small lady that was just it was
must she have
was
been tiny. A really small
she
tiny. Lady
she was
thought she was a fox.
She said it. She sort of scurried across the road.
Did she have a bushy tail?
But she scurried. She scurried across the road at a great rate of knots because, anyway. I just thought of myself. You don't see very many fat people running at 4 a.m, do you? They're very dedicated to their cause. They're the real committed individuals that are running at, you know, you see fat people walking, trying to become less fat, but actually running in gear. Anyway,
I have never seen a fox that I would compare to a woman, or a person, woman or man.
She was scurrying across the road, and she was walking. She wasn't like she was on hands and knees. She was running.
Oh, that is funny.
Anyway,
that is funny. I did see. Speaking of unusual things this morning, like women who look like foxes. I saw a gentleman walking down the road just around the corner here. He had a big, long, black coat on. He had one of those face shields, COVID sort of face shield, and then a face mask on underneath that, so he's very protected, and just holding this 2-metre crucifix.
I saw him the other day too.
Just walking up and down.
No, I saw him too. Not today, but last week. I saw him.
You saw him?
Yeah, I did.
Just up the road here?
Yeah, it was on top of Lygon Street.
Yeah.
That's right. I saw him there last week, yeah.
Like...
That was very unusual.
I'm all for making a statement for your peoples.
But don't make it that time when there's no one around.
4 o'clock in the morning. You've got to get some coverage.
That's what I thought.
You've got to get some exposure.
You're not impressing too many people that time.
It's got to get some Instagram coverage.
No, I saw that too.
That was an unusual sighting.
And he didn't have any disciples behind him or anything like that.
No disciples.
He was one out.
No disciples. It was unusual. Not quite small lady fox style, but was an unusual thing to see this morning.
Now, you know what I did yesterday? I got the weights. I got them.
Oh!
So Jimmy's been at me about getting dumbbells. Yes. I've never got this sort of stuff before in my life.
He has.
And he's been at me, sort of real peer pressure. So I got them yesterday, 2 15-kilo dumbbells. You know where I got them from?
Rebel.
No.
Kmart.
Correct. I thought I was a bit embarrassed getting them from Kmart because it didn't look overly professional. But they were half the price they were at Rebel. And at the end of the day, it's just weight.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't really matter, should it?
You can't get it too far wrong.
So I got 2 15-kilo dumbbells from Kmart.
Well done.
$55 each. Still quite expensive.
$55.
But at Rebel, they were like 80-odd for 15 kilos.
Well, you've saved money and you're going to get super-duper fit. You'll be ripped to bits within a month. You look like Cody Simpson.
How long do you think it will take? Oh, before?
Two or three years. Well, no, we're on a slow and steady build here. We've got some work to do.
So I've got my program and I'm going to attempt to start it today.
But we're committing.
I don't understand what he's written down and stuff, but I'm starting today.
We're committing.
They're a lot heavier than I thought. We talked about this yesterday.
Yes.
Because Jimmy said, "Oh, how strong is he?" Oh, I'm naturally very strong. And he was weighing up whether to go the 17.5 or the 15.
Yeah, no, I did think the 17.
And then I thought, I'll go the 20. And he goes, "No, just stick with the 17.5. Well, I went to get the 15 off the shelf. I just dropped it on my foot. So I had to get a trolley and put the two in the trolley and wheel them to the car. And I was really trying to get there quickly to the car because I was a bit embarrassed. I'm putting the trolley through the shopping centre with 2 15-kilo weights. That was all that was in the trolley.
At least you've made it. At least you made an effort. To get out there. 15 kilos too heavy, says someone off the SMS. Was better than the 17.5 Jim wanted them to get.
There's a gym in the shopping centre and there's a couple of people that just got out of their workout and I'm wheeling down the... And it was just an acknowledgement. Oh, yeah, you're like me. You're a gym man. Just a nod as I'm wheeling 2 dumbbells from Kmart in a trolley to the car.
Didn't ask you to go in the bag. Journey. Put it in a plastic bag and carry them that way?
Should've covered them or something. Anyway.
Well, good on you. Good on you for getting out there and having a go. Slow and steady wins a race. Slow and steady. Now, the Prez is out there walking this morning on the morning walk with the dog, confirming it's cold. No, like really cold. That's the Prez is this morning. 15 kilos too heavy. I might start with 10 kilos, start with 7.5 kilos and work up. You have to go back. You have to go back and change them.
Take them back.
Hey, there's a picture of the Queen.
Oh, yes.
Her Majesty in the paper today on page 3. She looks like she's going really well, by the way.
She seems to have made her a bit of a renaissance.
Yeah, there was some concern about her welfare not too long ago, I saw. She's wearing her Order of the Thistle robes and her Balmoral estate in Aberdeenshire, Scotland. That robe, right, does it look toasty and warm? Something you'd like an hoodie you'd wear, wear on the couch? It just looks like a dramatic hoodie.
It does. I thought the same thing. it's either that or curtains.
How often do you reckon she chucks the robe on?
Well, you know, it'd be for fancy dress parties and stuff like that. And
where does it hang? Because it's got a really long train. So is it a really high sort of wardrobe or a rack across the top of the wardrobe, a really high one?
Well, that's her Order of the Thistle robe. I don't even know what that means.
Well, that's her Order of the Thistle robe.
But is that the number one robe?
Or is that one that's... seating, do you think?
Well, I don't know.
I'm going to have a look. I'm going to find out right now. Order of the Thistle robe. That's what I'm going to do. Google right now. For the Order's great occasions, such as its annual service each June or July, as well as for coronations, the knights and ladies wear an elaborate costume. The mantle is a green robe worn over their suits or military uniforms. The mantle is lined with a white taffeta. It is tied with green and gold tassels. That's no white. What's that mean? Speak to me about something else. Anyway, I thought it was interesting that she looks so good because she'd been having a rough trot. So here's to Her Majesty having a great time. That's nice. In fact, in today's weather, she might need that. That robe today. She's out there walking with her crucifix today on Lygon Street. She might need that robe. Did you see that the number one pub meals have been released across the country in the last 12 months.
What page is that on?
No, it's not in here. I read it last night. I don't know where I read it. Must have been on the interweb somewhere, socials somewhere. The number one pub meals in Australia. What do you think across the nation? We'll start with the nation. What do you think is the number one go-to meal at the pub for Australians?
Well, it would be a chicken parmigiana.
Incorrect.
Well, then it's the wrong report.
No, it's not. This is fact. This is the order takers processing all the numbers, all the registers across the nation.
So I'd have steak would be up there. I'm not sure. They're the only two things I'd order at the pub. Fish and chips.
Aha. The number one meal across the nation in the pubs, as released by this study, is the chicken schnitty. Like just the basic schnitty.
Okay.
No cheese and tomato paste and stuff on the top. Mm. That's the number one. In Victoria, it is the chicken parmigiana.
I don't think the chicken parmigiana is as popular in New South Wales and Queensland. I don't think.
Well, clearly not.
Maybe that's wrong, actually.
Schnitty's getting a run.
Yeah.
So the schnitty across the nation is number one at the pub. And the parmigiana across Victoria is the number one. Coming in second place in Victoria is the fish and chip.
Mm-hmm.
Third place is the chicken schnitty. Not a steak to be seen in the top three.
What about a burger?
No. Not in the top
three. What's four and five?
I can't remember. I'm trying to find it, but I can't find it. Not to be seen. I was surprised at the lack of steakage.
Yeah, I thought there would be a steak in there.
Well, I think steak needs to be crumbed. Well, what we're learning about this is the steak needs to be crumbed.
But I would have thought the burger would have definitely been in the top three. The burger and chips.
Schnitzel, what did I say was number two? Fish and chips and the schnitty.
Steak
all
sandwich.
Crumbed. Except for the chip, of course, but the fish is. All crumbed. We need to start crumbing steaks. And they as an industry need to start crumbing themselves and getting that, selling that to the pubs. There is that. What is the crumb steak called? What is that?
Crumb.
It's got a
Never heard of a crumb steak.
Yeah, there is a crumb sort of. There's a word for it. There's a term for it. Someone let me know if there's a mess. And interestingly, the number one beverage. What do you reckon that is?
Postmates Coke.
Alcoholic. Sorry. Not that, you're probably the wrong person.
Just
to ask
a pot of beer.
In the last 12 months, the number one beverage in pubs across the nation is the espresso martini.
What?
Because they put it on tap these days. They're doing all the tap stuff, which is garbage. It tastes like crap. The number one, when you're ordering a meal and getting a drink, it is the espresso martini. And then the brewery fresh cut and draft is number two.
Right.
So a bit of feedback for you on the pub scene.
My dad, we went out for James's birthday last week. As you know, the Telstar Hotel, he had a steak sandwich. He thought it was that good. He wanted to go back the next night and have it again. It's unusual. Two nights in a row.
Yeah, it is unusual. So you're not happy with the meals at home?
Definitely. Well, no. No. Mum doesn't really cook much anymore.
And neither she should. She's done enough.
Her career's finished in that department.
Her career's finished. Question off the SMS. Would the guy with the crucifix be allowed in the cubicle? Well, it's a big crucifix. He wouldn't get through the door. Especially if Whitey and I are in the same one. That's going to be a problem, getting all three of us in there. That man's lost it.
Ming saw it. In goes De Bruyne. Kevin De Bruyne!
Drama, drama, drama yesterday in the Premier League finish. It was Manchester City who took out the title fourth time in 5 years, the sixth all up in their Premier League career, and three goals in 5 minutes was enough to get it done, and drama it was. Guy Mowbray was there watching it all unfold, BBC's Match of the Day lead commentator, who joins us on The Breakfast Club this morning. G'day, Guy.
Morning, everybody. How are you?
We are very well. You sound a bit deflated, Guy.
You know what? I'm still a little bit croaky. The voice has not come back yet because there was a lot of screaming went on yesterday. It was that's the most mad 5.5 minutes I've ever experienced.
So what was the vibe like? Because we were watching it unfold early doors in the morning, and Aston Villa 2-0 up, and Liverpool fans would have been jumping out of their seats all across the world. And in 3 minutes, 3 goals in 5 minutes changes the whole course of the season.
Well, the bizarre thing was, Liverpool were never on top. This is the strange thing about it. They were never first in the league at any point, and I thought they would be. And there was a stage where if Liverpool got one goal, they won the league, and that would mean that City needed 3 goals. And City got their 3 goals before Liverpool got their next one. and the whole thing was just crazy. Trying to keep tabs on it, you think it's a simple enough equation, and it turned out it wasn't all that simple in the end.
Oh, we're still with us? You still with us, Guy?
I'm there.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah.
Got you. We're back.
You got me. Have you got me? Yeah. Sorry. They're an incredible team, Manchester City. We talk about money, and people always talk about money, but all the top teams across the whole of the continent, across the whole of Europe, they all have a lot of money. That we're talking fine margins. And what they've done is they've recruited the best in terms of how they play, the best in terms of their mentality. And the mentality aspect is the big deal yesterday. Because, 2-0 down, it's gone.
Yep.
And to come back like they did, that's sport at its absolute best.
They've got a knack for making big things happen, having big moments on that last match day in the EPL of recent years, which is quite remarkable. They're able to do it again. So what is it then? What is a great team? What's the mentality of a great team? How come they're able to do this, knowing that everything is on the line and they're 20 minutes away from disaster?
I don't know. And the cynics will say it's money. That's the thing. But I'm with you. I'm trying to work it out because this is the levels of, like you say, it's all gone, and then they have the strength to come back and suddenly find themselves. I've got to say, the first half yesterday, they were really poor compared to how they usually are, and to come back like they did, that just shows that this is more than a financial thing. This is the mentality that they have. This is the ability to win when everything's against them. And it was just a mad. I was there 10 years ago in 2012 when they won it in the 93rd minute and 20 seconds against QPR.
Yeah,
they needed two goals then. They needed 3 goals yesterday, and to get them as they did, whoops! Open mouth time. You just don't see that very often.
Often, what happens when a team gets behind is that they panic. When they need a lot to happen really quickly, they panic, and it all unravels. Their structures unravel, and they can't get it done. There didn't seem to be, even though, as you said, there was only 20 minutes left, there didn't seem to necessarily be a lot of panic. They were well executed when they got those goals to get themselves back into the contest.
The key for that point is the second goal, the equalising goal. If you look at Rodri's finish for that second goal, goodness me, that is, if you want a definition of cool, yeah, get John Travolta in Greece. Cool is Rodri passing the ball into the goal from 25 yards. That was unbelievable. That to me is the best finish I've seen in many a year. That, he's pulled back to him, he's on the edge of the box, he didn't hit it, he didn't just blast it, he passed it. He picked his spot, and he found his spot. He's been exceptional, by the way. Rodri and Gundogan. Funny enough, yesterday is one of those stories where, we know about Mahrez, we know about Sterling, we know about Phil Foden, who's come to the fore, and De Bruyne and Grealish. These are the big names. These are the showy players. Yesterday, Rodri, Ilkay Gundogan. Two players who possibly go a little bit under the radar when maybe they shouldn't. But it was a day for, as you've just rightly said, a day for cool heads yesterday, and they were the coolest of all.
Yeah, and it was an amazing day, and we were talking about this yesterday. It wasn't just about the top. It was obviously Liverpool and Man City going for the title. It was Tottenham and Arsenal going for the top four, and then down the bottom it was a question of whether Burnley would go down or could Leeds hold on. There were so many storylines, and this great day, the way they have it, that everyone plays at the same time on the final day.
Yeah, it's a shame it doesn't happen every week, isn't it? That, but such is the way, the commercial way, and the different fixture times and what have you. But I don't think it's ever happened before where there have been issues with the title, the Champions League qualification, and relegation all on the final day. I wonder if there's another league in the world where that happens, where there's so much going on. It's why the Premier League is box office. It's why the Premier League is worldwide, to be honest. It seems to happen, things like that, not to that extreme, but there's always something. After 38 games and 10 months, there is something to be decided significant on the final day. And I would put it up there. I mean, 2012 is always hailed as the greatest finish to a Premier League season, where City got two goals in injury time to pip United. I reckon when we digest it in years to come, I wonder if yesterday was better because of the fact that they did need three goals. Three goals!
Yeah.
What was the noise like in the stadium? Because watching it on television, you could actually see the camera shaking. So just explain to us what that feeling is like, the noise when that third goal went through.
I've got to say, the noise yesterday at City was bizarre. It was on and off. It was full on and then full off all day long. And City sometimes get a little bit of stick for the it's not like Anfield, it's not like Liverpool, where the noise is constantly, the chanting and the singing is constant. City are a little bit different, and I think the reason for that is they don't have the tourists. They don't have that. I also think they're that good that they have people sitting back and waiting to be entertained rather than roaring their team on. So it's a bit of a strange relationship with it there at City. But yesterday, when that first goal went in, it suddenly switched on when the team needed it most. And I have to say, the second and third goal, this is probably a good thing for the people of the UK, but you couldn't hear my commentary. There was somebody behind me screaming and off the decibel scale. I still don't quite know what I said, if I'm totally honest. I think it made sense. I think it was okay. But you could hear the screams. You could hear the elation. And what is it about sport in general that does this to people, rational people? You know, what is it about it that just turns people into people they're not every day? You can have any drama, any film, any movie, any box office movie anywhere in the world, and you cannot recreate properly excitable drama like sport does.
We couldn't agree more. It's pretty well said. We don't know what the answer is to the question, what is it about sport? But it's certainly nice to be involved in it when it happens, and you were there for a pretty special moment yesterday. What about the ground invasion afterwards? Is that normal for the end of a season, or is that a bit of a one-off?
Again, it's a mixed message. It's entirely normal for the end of the season. Most clubs up and down the leagues, the fans will spill on the final home game of the season. No matter if you're mid-table, you're bottom of the table, you're top of the table, this always happens. It's a little bit of a worrying trend at the moment that there seems to be a sinister edge. I wish it wouldn't happen, but there seems to be this edge to it where you seem to have to revel in the opponent's misery more than your own glory. And we've had a worrying trend of opposing players being attacked, being slapped, whatever it is, and that's got to stop. That's got to stop. Run on the pitch, celebrate your team by all means, but for goodness sake, shake the opponent's hands. The word is sport. It's sport. If you understand sport and you understand what it means, you know what you should do at the end of the game. You know what you should do. And this is a little bit of a worrying trend at the moment. Mm. We don't mind the flares. We don't mind the smoke bombs. You know, they add colour. They add everything. We like the ultra mentality. We like all that. But if you're going to go on the pitch, by the way, you shouldn't, but I understand why you might feel the urge. If you're going to do it, leave the opposition alone and shake the hand and thank them for play. For goodness sake, this is standard behaviour, isn't it?
Well, yes. The standard of behaviour might be dropping, though. That's probably the problem. Across the planet, not just in sport, full stop. What about the teams coming up? Who are we looking forward to seeing next season in the Premier League?
Well, we're still waiting for that final spot, aren't we? Nottingham Forest or Huddersfield. I think the popular vote in this country is for Nottingham Forest because of their history, because of they've won the two European Cups they are a big deal and they've been too long out of the top flight. So the general feeling is most people seem to want Nottingham Forest back up there. I live in Yorkshire. I'm not far away from Huddersfield. So I can't really go full beam for that. Let the best team win. Let's see. I can get home for tea when I go to Huddersfield, so that's a big factor for me. so you've got to take these things into account. The playoff final is big though, and Forest coming back would be a really big deal. Actually, it would be a really big deal. The whole Brian Clough thing will be revisited, and he was the greatest ever. So that wouldn't be a bad thing.
Well, there's plenty to talk about in the off-season, as always. It was great drama yesterday. Great to be able to chat to you about the moments that matter in the end of the Premier League season, Guy. Good luck to you. I know there's some cricket on the agenda for you at some stage for Bishop Thorpe. We wish you the best of luck.
You know, I got a few runs the other week, but I think that was it was hit and miss.
As is often the case and when we play local cricket. Good luck to you. Go well.
Cheers, guys.
Guy Mowbray with us, BBC Match of the Day lead commentator, who is there watching all the action unfold as Man City put three past Villa in 5 minutes. It's a good point about the second one from Rodri. It was as calm and as measured as you've ever seen from outside the box into the left corner, bottom left corner. It was quite brilliant.
It is amazing because we were talking yesterday about Sydney and Carlton, that game how Sydney are trying to sort of force in the last quarter and they lost all their structure and they were just going crazy for it. And there was still 10 minutes to go in the last quarter and they're playing like there's a minute to go. You've still, even though you've got to go quickly and you've got to score quickly, you've still got to have some level of system and organisation about it. And in soccer, where it's so hard to score, how they kept their formations and how they kept their discipline, I thought was quite incredible. I mean, there was still, 10, 15 minutes to go. It wasn't as though that was sort of, where the goalkeeper comes forward for corners and all that sort of stuff.
But yeah.
In the last couple of minutes, but it was still pretty impressive. Hey, something else that was very impressive was Justin Thomas yesterday in the USPGA.
Yes.
I'm keen to try and grab Ben Everall or someone to talk about this during the course of the week because he kind of made history. He came from seven back at the start of the final round, but he's in fact eight behind early in the final round. So that's pretty amazing that he can come back from there. Now, as we were saying, as the golf was unfolding while we were on air yesterday, there was a lot of players at the top of the leaderboard who had never won a major. In fact, there were some that never won a tournament in America. So we felt that there may have been some choking late.
Some leakage.
Yes, some leakage late, and that certainly was the case. But Justin Thomas, who now has two majors, two PGA championships, he was so good under pressure because he had four birdies in his last 10 holes and no bogeys. But you can actually see the look in his eye through those last sort of five or six holes. He went into battle mode, whereas a lot of the others started to get a bit scared. He went the complete other way and could have very easily made two or three other birdies. He was clearly the best player. He ended up getting into a playoff with Will Zalatoris, who himself made a really good putt on 18 to force the playoff. Unfortunately for Mito Pereira, who 100 in the world, never won on the PGA Tour. His ball in the water with a horrendous swing.
One of the worst swing I've ever seen in professional
golf.
It wasn't
too good. Hit the ball in the water, ended up making double bogey when a par would have seen him as the champion. And then there was Lucas Herbert, who had some dramas on the back nine, but still was good enough to be able to birdie 17 and 18 to get himself back inside the top 15. So there's a good check for him. Matt Fitzpatrick was another one who was chasing his first victory or first major. I reckon he lost it. I reckon, a lot of...
Is that the pocket speaking?
Yes. But a lot of focus was on Mito Pereira, but Fitzpatrick, who's won multiple times on the European Tour, it was set up for him. And unfortunately, he made too many mistakes on the back nine, and he was really hurting afterwards as well.
It was a dramatic finish, no doubt, a bit like the EPL to the PGA yesterday. Justin Thomas, you just knew. His body language, he knew. So he was the only one that could win it.
Betting in the run, he got out at the exchanges to 750-1, Justin Thomas.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Well, when you're eight shots back, you don't win too many times.
No.
Now, he's got to make four, as you said, he made four shots, but the other leaders have to drop four to get to that point. So, unusual occurrence, particularly in a major, to see that happen. But well done to JT. We might try and get a hold of someone, maybe even try and get a hold of Lucas, if we can, through the journey as well.
Just quickly, the only thing I want to add on that is that the caddy for Justin Thomas is Bones, that used to caddy for a long time for Phil Mickelson. And since he's moved to Justin Thomas, I think it's 19 tournaments they've been together. And on it's either 11 or 13 occasions they finished inside the top 10, top 15. Should have checked that before I actually gave the stack, because it's a bit sort of scratchy there. But
so you're saying Lucas needs you on the bag, is what you're saying?
No, I don't want to go on Lucas's bag.
Why?
I reckon that'd be a tough job.
Iconic, that's the word that comes to mind.
No doubt.
Every night.
Now, what dinner. Channel was MASH on?
Channel 10.
It was.
Oh, good it was.
It was.
After the news. Unbelievable times. Every night, MASH. We would watch MASH every night.
So we,
with dinner.
We didn't watch it. We weren't allowed to watch television and eat dinner at the same time. But
no, we were allowed to watch it.
We did watch MASH most nights.
It's the greatest show in the history of mankind. That's the theme song for MASH. I'm disappointed, Steve, I didn't jump in there. Good morning, Mark.
Yeah, half. Well, I didn't get MASH, I don't think, in Shepparton. We had Channel 2 and Channel 6. So six. Channel 2 was the ABC and 6 was a merging or a, what do you call
bit
it?
Of a mash-up.
Like a mash-up of every channel. So you got a bit of everything. A little bit of MASH, but wasn't as good as you got. It was Channel 0, every I think, night. In it Melbourne will, in those days.
It no. would have been at some point.
Well, at yeah. some point.
But I think when MASH was in its peak, it was Channel 0.
It was 10 in my life.
Channel O.
Possibly. Now, we played that song because one of the actors from MASH is having a birthday today. And one of my favourites. What a great character he was. Gary Berghoff is having a birthday today. He was?
Radar.
Correct. Walter Radar O'Reilly in the long-running MASH television series and the original MASH movie back in 1970.
Now, we talked about this not that long ago about MASH, and I was really surprised at when the last episode was. It was further back than I thought.
It doesn't tell me when it
and
finished.
It was, wasn't it was like the highest rating show in the history of the world or something?
I reckon it was about 85 that ended up.
Well, I'll Google that as we go through this. Gary, or Radar's having a birthday today, and I need to know from you, Steve, how old is Radar O'Reilly?
Radar's getting on. My radar says 84.
84. I like the way you just integrated that. That's nice. Nice.
Steve, I liked it too.
Yes. There was a quite a silent shoulder shrug. The giggle. You know when the giggle gets the shoulders going? He took himself off mic to do it. He knew he was hot to trot then. Whitey? You can't just sit there.
73.
What did you say? 84? You said 73. Neither of you are in the window. But Steve-O's closest. Gary Berghoff today, Radar O'Reilly is 79 today. Happy birthday to Radar.
Not sure he went on with it after that, did he?
No, he's a bit of a one-hit wonder.
Well, a lot of these people got typecast.
They did.
Stereotyped, even.
They did. My word. Anyway, I think he made enough out of it, so he'll be okay. Other birthdays today, Patti LaBelle's having a birthday. She's 78 today. Who else we got? Priscilla Presley.
Who's Patti LaBelle?
You don't know who Patti LaBelle is? US singer, lead vocalist with La Belle. Mm. Number one song in 75 with Lady Marmalade.
Priscilla Presley, her most famous scene. Flying high.
The beaver was stuffed.
the Naked Gun.
Naked Gun.
Ex-wife Elvis Presley and ex-mother-in-law to Michael Jackson. It was a nice day for her. She's 77 today. Is Priscilla?
Is she really?
Yeah, she's 77.
Jeez.
Who else have we got here? Lane Beachley, Australian surfing legend, is the big fitty today. Hang on a second. Lane Beachley is not Lane Beachley.
Did she throw
it? It's a stage name.
Is it?
Really?
Yeah, it is. I did not know this. Lane Beachley was born Tanya Gardner. Well, there you go. Wow. This is why the birthday bulletin's important.
I mark it down for that half. I'm not really a stage name type of person. There's no need for that, Whitey. That's excessive.
Is she putting Beachley just because she's at the beach all the time?
I don't know. Well, I clearly don't know. I didn't know it.
Married Kirk Pengilly.
Of?
In Excess.
Correct.
Sax man.
Well, Tanya Gardner's having a birthday today. That's not anywhere near as sexy as Lane Beachley, but happy birthday because it's her 50th today. Kim Valentine from Neighbours is 45 today. She played Libby Kennedy, part of the Kennedy clan. Poor old Carl, and what's his wife's name?
Susan.
Susan, A lot of turmoil.
Libby's had a couple of goes. She had a couple because she came back. Because, of course, when she was first on, she was a student at Erinsborough High. And then she came back in when she was the teacher.
Mm. Was she? Andy Lee's having a birthday today. He's 41. Happy birthday, Andy. Great Carlton
so
man.
She took after her mum because her mum was a teacher. Mum was the principal at Erinsborough at one point.
That's right. I do remember that. Lachie Neal's having a birthday today. The Brownlow medalist. He's 29 today for the Brisbane Lions. And Emma McKeon. A legend of Australian swimming now, is having a birthday today.
She's been in the news lately.
Well, she's in the news today. She's on page 48 with Cody Simpson having some photographs. She is 28 today. That's what's happening in the birthday bulletin today.
If you had to choose one player to play for your football team out of Patrick Cripps or Lachie Neal, who would you choose?
I want Patrick Cripps.
Oh, I'm on Patrick Cripps every day of the week.
Who do you want?
Lachie Neal.
Okay. Ooh. 2-1. We win. Stevo!
He's more tagged. Well, we got tagged on the weekend. I think Cripps at the moment's untaggable.
He's in pretty hot form. Well, yep. They're both outstanding players, yep. But I'm on Cripper.
Yeah, plenty of news around, but firstly, I'm concerned about the 15K dumbbells for Whitey. Out the back, people are talking. Who in the gym, they reckon 7.5, more starts slowly, more repetition. Mm-hmm. So I'm concerned there may be some injuries there. And the new
I've got an advisor.
Overs, Whitey. The new chocolate in England, which is interesting too. Did you see this? The Tato cheese and onion. If you've ever been to England, which you have, Whitey, I'm sure you've had the Tato cheese and onion crisps, as they call them.
No, I don't like cheese and onion.
Well, what they're doing now is they're breaking up the crisps into tiny bits and then covering it in chocolate bar. So cheese and onion chocolate, and it's taken off.
Do you know what? That makes me really happy. I'm a cheese and onion sort of guy. I'll go to the supermarket if I'm just a little peckish, you know, just need a little snack. I'll get the cheese and onion chips. Love them.
Do you eat them in the supermarket?
No, absolutely not.
Because there are people that they'll buy something. People buy in the supermarket and they eat it as they're doing the shopping.
I've had an orange juice or something as I walked around. I don't eat chips.
Unacceptable.
But I've at times eaten some, say, kettle chips, the plain, and then gone a bit of chocolate as well and mixed it in at the same time. You know, when you're in a bit of a rush, you go to the fridge, have chocolate after the chips, and it works. So I think the cheese and onion could be a winner
for
you.
Cheese and onion does, it's exotic.
Might have a bit of a tang to it.
I quite like that.
Yeah, but on more serious matters, Harper, obviously the footy world at the moment, with Sam Fisher in some strife with potential drug trafficking charges.
Yes.
Now, it's sort of raised a lot of issues about life after footy for players. Now, Nick Riewoldt's broken his silence on this. He's very close with Fisher, of course, his former captain and teammate. He's wondering whether he could have done more. And on the couch last night, he came out and said that drug abuse, he believes, is still a massive issue in AFL footy and something that needs to be looked at. Let's just take a listen to Riewoldt last night.
But it's a cautionary tale, and enough's enough, I think. So there are not a lot of sort of Sam Fisher-type incidents that we're hearing about now, but there are a lot of players that are slipping through the cracks. And that would be my assertion and my experience, that so many players right now are slipping through the cracks of the AFL system, and when they come out the other side, their lives are ending up in pretty horrific condition. So let this be the line in the sand, enough is enough moment. This is the cautionary tale. Something needs to be done, because players and teammates can do as much as they like, but they're not experts in the space.
Nick Riewoldt on the couch last night on Fox Footy. You know what? I reckon the responsibility has to be coming back to the player and the athlete in these occasions. I'll throw myself in for a little bit. We were given and are given unbelievable opportunity through our careers and have education rammed down our throats about the importance of planning for life after football. And it's difficult. Trust me, it is difficult when the lights go off to get back into what regulation life is, because it's an unusual, a surreal world in many respects, being a professional athlete, particularly in Australian rules footy in Australia, where it's the number one game. It's different. It's hard to get to normal life. But the education and the constant conversation about planning for life after and giving yourself a chance to integrate normally and in time, because many find it difficult, and some more than others, clearly. But there's enough support. The PA do a terrific job with the outduction programs they've got going these days. It's not just about know, getting you in and spitting you out, there's a duty of care that they have, and they take pretty seriously. And all the opportunities they do give the players post their playing careers as well.
Well, we've been part of that.
That's right, exactly. We've done that a few times, haven't we?
So there's really, there can't be any more done, you believe, the Players Association. I mean, as you're right, you get educated as a footballer. You get extra education than a normal person. So
it's rammed down your throat.
So what you're saying here is this is one that's obviously slipped through the cracks, but have you got examples of players that have struggled half? Obviously, you've blossomed post-footy career.
Yeah, but it wasn't always... Well, depends who you talk to, but it wasn't always the case. I remember the first 6 months being a nightmare. Absolute nightmare. I had no idea what I was going to do with my life. I consider myself a reasonably intelligent human and rational and simple human, but I didn't plan for it well enough, and I was ignorant and naive to it all. But I found my feet and got rolling. But there's enough support mechanisms these days for players, with clubs, with PAs, with management. In the end, you make of it what you want, I think. And you make of it, and you get out of it what you put into it in your post-40 life. So the responsibility does have to come back to the players. Now, I've never been into the whole drug thing, and I know that a lot of people get involved and dabble and whatever they do. That's the world. That's not just sport. That's the world. I've never been involved in that, and I don't know how that grabs you and rips you down. I don't understand that. But there's got to be an element of responsibility that goes to the individual. And you will have instances like this, like you will anywhere, that there are always outliers. But I think you look at the numbers of recent years, and even just the anecdotal evidence of me and my teammates and being involved at Clubland to a degree these days and seeing the way players exit, it's there's a much greater opportunity to find normal life, if you want to phrase it like that, easier than it was in the old days. You get much more support.
Not having sympathy is probably not quite the right way to put it, but I'm a bit, again, like you, Half and Steve-O, the amount of additional education and support that an AFL player gets and a former AFL player gets that not regular people in society get, they get so much better education, which means they get so much better understanding of the ramifications of all decisions that are made in life, that they should be making better decisions.
It's a sad story,
because
though,
they get so well supported.
Lovely guy. Sam, he's
a horrible story.
Country bloke from the Riverland, South Australia. I met him when he first arrived in footy. Played golf off one or two. You know, just a laid-back country fella. So, it is sad news.
There's stories like this everywhere.
That's right. There are a lot of people that have succumbed to the lure of drugs in regular society. Sam's should be treated no... better than someone who, you know, might have a job packing a warehouse that's succumbed the same way. I mean, this is not a new story with Sam Fisher. This is something that's been known for quite some time, and he's had plenty of advice along the way as to whether he's doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And it just annoys me a little bit, knowing the education that these players get so much more, and the support they get so much more than people in regular society. Yeah.
Mm. A couple of other issues, Half. Obviously, the chicken wing. Sam Switkowski on Ginnivan. Ginnivan can't stay out of the news, can he, at the moment? So
no.
I've had a good look at this one. I don't like the chicken wing at all. Of course, it started with Chris Judd incident all those years ago. It was quite forceful the way it was pushed back. The commentators mentioned it. It seemed to sort of slip under the radar. Chris O has sent that straight to the tribunal, which doesn't mean it's going to be a six-week ban or anything, but you think you probably cop 2 weeks for that.
Maybe.
The look of it's terrible. No, you can't only have 1 week for that. I mean, you umpire junior footy. We don't want kids doing the chicken wing in the under-10s. You've got to set an example, Half.
But this is happening all the time. This is not you talked about Chris Judd. The chicken wing tackle is something that happens all the time. Now, I think he went in a little bit more aggressively, maybe because of who the player was.
And it was straight after the goal he kicked.
But, yes, correct. So I think that that needs to be considered to a point, but Chris has done the right thing. Send it to the tribunal, get himself to explain what he was doing. And I think it's also a shot across the bow for players that are doing it aggressively that we won't stand for it. But it's nothing more than a week.
I remember chicken winging someone at Icon Park, funnily enough. Don't know, it was a Bulldogs player. can't remember who it was, but it was a Bulldogs player, one of your boys.
It was intentional half or just accidentally on purpose?
No, I knew exactly what I was doing. Had him on the ground. I wanted to get his arm up the back just to, so he couldn't move. Now, there was no force. I've just had a look at that incident again.
Yeah, this has got force, this one.
That does seem... There's a bit of a little kick at the end what we don't want to see. But sometimes you find the arm in that position, you say, right, I'm just going to lock that because he can't go anywhere.
Yeah, well, I've got concerns though, Whitey, that we've become a one-week tribunal. Everything's 1 week. But that's something not, like that's this, not that's about it. No, I think it's 2 weeks. It's a non-football action.
If we need to stand that out. Might have been a bit different.
It was close to probably popping out.
Yeah, but it didn't.
Yeah, but it's the potential to cause serious injury.
But you can't have any more than 1 week when blokes are getting hit in the head and getting 1 week.
I wouldn't have thought it's anything more than 1 week if it's a week. There's a little kick at the end which I don't like.
Yep.
But outside of that, I don't see too much.
I think that's a 1 week. Hey, don't do that again.
Yeah.
And just some injury news. Obviously, Tom Lynch, as we mentioned yesterday, we were spot on with that one. He's going to miss at least this Friday night. He'll have the bye and then maybe one more. Josh Kennedy's a bad one, a hammy, 8 to 10 weeks. That's a real blow at this stage of his career. Will he get back? That's going to be a challenge.
Did he get cited?
A tendon. What's that?
Did he get cited?
1 week.
Mm.
1 week for the hit on Doherty.
Doherty, yeah.
So, but I'm with you, Steve. I mean, it feels like this is his last year. The way that he's
really
been used
borderline.
As a sub,
the
way that he's not being put into the midfield, I think he's going to probably stay at Sydney and be sort of pushed into more the sort of the coaching mechanism as he goes along. I hope he does get back.
Danger will miss the next two. Dangerfield, just get that calf niggle. Bit banged up, Danger. He's been such a battering ram. That's his only human half. Things can catch up with you. So he's going to have a bit of a spell with the bye as well and then come back. He's been enormous danger, but you just can't do it forever.
We'll have a chat to Isaac about that.
Yeah, because I think that's right. I think they're going to sort of put him into like a training camp for 3 or 4 weeks.
Mini pre-season sort of stuff.
Yeah, down at Y River or somewhere, down where he is. Where's he? Y River?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Off this mess,
around that way.
Can you blokes hold Steve accountable for his take it to the bank Twilight Grand Final call at 7 a.m. last Friday?
I didn't say take it to the bank.
You said take it to the bank.
Good. That's a good call.
And I came back on at 10:30 with breaking news or traditional start time.
No, go to the tape. I didn't say take it to the bank. I said it's all pointing that way at this stage.
To the bank, my listener says. Our listeners never make things up.
Can we go to the tape?
No, we'll go to the tape. I'm quite happy to go. I've got to ring Isaac Smith, and I'm going to after this. I'm going to get my 7.5 kg dumbbells later on and get to work.
Seems like you're running away from the story.
15, you're going to end up ripping a bicep tendon. I'm really concerned for you.
Hey, he's not doing bicep curls. He's doing functional movements.
I think that's part of the thing. I think it's part of the program.
Not with 15 kegs, it's not. Not with you for straight up.
No, I practiced it last night.
I'm going to get Isaac's take on this. He would love this story. He'll be joining us after the break from the Cats. Isaac Smith in the Inner Sanctum after this. Let's talk some footy with Isaac Smith, our man from down the highway at the Cats in the Inner Sanctum on the Breakfast Club. He's with us 25 past 7 on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, Isaac.
Morning, Harv. How are we?
We are well. How are you?
Oh, very good. Can't complain.
Oh, good. That's nice. It's nice that you can't complain.
I am hearing good news, though.
What's that?
I'm hearing that Whitey's on a fitness regime.
Well, that's where I want to start with you. That's where I want to start. And our man is regiming again. I don't see a vessel of fluid to keep him hydrated, but we'll work on that, the baby steps. But he's got 15 keg dumbbells straight up. He's gone to Kmart yesterday and got some dumbbells. Isaac, is he gone over the top there? Does he need a little reduction in weight?
Well, what's he looking for? Is it chest or purely bicep?
What is the ideal outcome?
I've got no idea. I just did what I was told.
He's got full body movement. He's got compound movements. He's goblet squatting.
I've got the program. This is Jimmy Bartel's giving me this program. Isaac, tell me whether you do this sort of stuff. So push-ups, that's easy.
Yeah,
I know what they are. A plank.
Well, that's easy. You don't need weights for any of this.
Have you done a plank before?
I have done a plank. The beauty about being 15 years in the AFL system is that most of my body's cooked, so I don't have to lift any weights these days.
That's true. A flat DB bench.
Dumbbell. Flat dumbbell bench.
An incline bench.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't have a bench, so that's a bit of an issue.
That's a problem.
And overhead press.
That's easy.
So that's...
Well, the overhead press might get you a 15 kilo.
15 kegs, that's going to cost him, I reckon. You're right.
is that when we just go like that?
Yeah, push it up.
Yeah, I practiced that last night. I did that all right. I didn't do too many of them, though. Legs, DB deadlift.
Dumbbell deadlift, yep.
Goblet squat.
Yep.
What is that?
Just hold it up in your chest and squat. Easy.
Dead bug.
Yeah, don't worry, it's not going to work for you.
Don't worry about that with 10 kilos. You'll rip your arms out.
And a reverse lunge.
Oh, yes. I can't say that could be good for your knees.
Day three is a pull.
We should always look after yourself. My goodness. It's got, I don't know what's happened here, Isaac. We might leave the regime for the moment.
I think there needs to be more explained there.
I'll get to that.
We might leave the regime.
No. Either side of that.
Yeah, we need a DB either at the front of that or the end of that, please.
Hey, a bit over.
No more regime chat. We're moving on.
A strict press.
Not working.
A seated hammer
all
curl.
All sorts of activity.
And an SADB row.
No, I'm out. Yeah. I'm done. I'm out. I want to talk footy with Isaac because the cats are hot to trot and I need to get it back on track real quick here.
That's the program.
Before we lose our way.
Well, hopefully you're not doing the program in front of anyone.
I need a spotter.
No. You're fluffer the way you're going. Now, where were you when Jezza kicked the barrel? Isaac, did you call for him to go the barrel?
Well, I kicked it to him, and I ended up about 3 metres behind him. So, we've got a bit of a talk club down at the club where Jezza, Hawk and I just seem to let talk go pre-game for about 5 minutes. And he'd been hitting it very well of late, and I was standing about, I thought, I'll get behind him here because I reckon he might pull it out. And I was right behind him, and as soon as it came off the boot, it was going straight through the middle. So GMHBA loved it, which was good.
So who's in the Torp Club?
Oh, myself, Hawk and Jezza.
Nice. So who's the best? Yeah. Explain it normally.
Well, we're all a little bit different. Mine more go for height with their distance. Hawk can shape his, and Jezza's a low, flat dart. So they're all a little bit different, but... it was awesome to see, and he certainly got the crowd up and about, and the boys up and about, which those moments are great to be playing footy in.
Where does Zach Toohey sit in the Talk Club? Or is he sort of next level?
Well, he must be taking his pre-game a little bit too seriously, to be honest. but he's also down back a bit, so he doesn't get to sort of, I would call myself a midfield forward. So I get to hang around with the big boys.
We were talking yesterday, mentioning Jeremy Cameron, just a slightly different role. There's times there on Saturday he was playing in the midfield. There was a couple of other players playing in different positions. You kind of changed it up a little bit on Saturday.
Yeah, it was a little bit of variation to what we were doing. And I think it's probably evolving a little bit where bringing younger guys into the team, and we're certainly giving them opportunities and giving them different looks, but we're also seeing where other guys can impact the game. And I've certainly learned over my time in the game that if you play the exact one position for 120 minutes, that sometimes, depending on how the game's evolving, it can be very difficult. So, I think we're starting to get the balance right with how we're shaping up against opposition. And on the weekend, even though we had 26 scoring shots to 13, we probably didn't kick as many goals as we liked. We felt like that we controlled the game the way we wanted to, and it turned out pretty well for us.
And you kind of went through the gears. There was a time there in the match where Port kind of got control of the match in that middle phase, but you didn't panic and you got yourselves going and you sort of, you know, put the game to bed quite quickly. I imagine that would have been one of the impressive parts of the game, that the fact you were challenged by a team that had won, you know, quite a few games over the last month and sort of took the game completely away from them quite quickly.
Yeah, it was. It was something that we've been unable to do for a few weeks now. We stopped the momentum of the opposition. We felt like, against St Kilda, and not taking anything away from them, but we felt like we were probably the better side for the larger percentage of that game, but when they got their run on a momentum, that they really pulled us apart and made us look silly. So, I mean, you take that out of that, what you'd like, but we felt like we played probably 2.5, 3 quarters of really good footy against them, but the quarter of footy they played, they were ultra impressive, and I think they kicked 7 or 8 straight. So, yeah, and that was a little bit of a trend that had been occurring for a few weeks. So it was nice to be able to control it when Port Adelaide came. We knew they'd come, and they've certainly got their side together back over the last month, and they've been playing really good footy.
They have. How are you guys tracking? Are you comfortable with where you're sitting at the moment, the way you're playing and the way the squad's evolved?
Yeah, I think we're building. We're probably a little bit disappointed with the couple of losses we have had, but then we watch Hawks go out and they beat Brisbane on the weekend, and Collingwood fly over to Perth and beat Fremantle. So it's a funny season. Other than Melbourne, who are out in front at the moment, there's probably not a clear number two. So although we've been disappointed with a few of our losses, we certainly want to build into the back half of the year, and we've also got some personnel out, and we've been probably, I'm not sure we've gone into a game yet with the same 22, let alone the same 18 or 15 or 16. So hopefully we can get some continuity there and get players like Jack Henry back in the side in the coming weeks. So, yeah, we feel like we're building. We're certainly not, we wouldn't be overly happy with some of the stuff we've dished up, but we've certainly dished up some really good footy as well. So it's a long season, I would say.
It is a long season, and that continuity is disrupted again for the next couple of weeks anyway, because Danger is being rested for the next couple of weeks with that little calf complaint. And we hear last night that he's going to be put through a little conditioning phase through the middle of the year. Is there anyone else going through this that these high-performance staff are going to be getting a few more sessions into?
Well, that's news to my ears, Arf. I've got no idea. I've obviously been a hermit for the last 24 hours. So that occurs all the time, as you'd know, in football clubs, that when you get injuries, players will go and work on different types of things, and where the high-performance staff think that they can get a real bang for buck in a short period of time with certain players. So usually I'll get thrown in the gym with 15 kilo dumbbells.
Ready for day 2.
I have a pull in my program. But, but do a goblet squat every now and then.
Yeah, they're good squats. They're very good squats.
Is he frustrated, Danger? I mean, it's not the first year now that he's had sort of niggling injuries, or, you know, he hasn't really had a clean run at it for quite a while. And he's obviously one of the best players in the competition. How is he going?
I think he's frustrated. I think as a individual athlete, you're always frustrated when you can't execute exactly what you want because your body's hampering you. But I think, and what I'd personally like as a plan is let's get him right for the back half of the year and make sure he's fit and firing then. So hopefully he doesn't have any more issues post this. But you know, moving to the club, and I was aware of how good of a player he was, but you'd only come up against him twice a year and how physical he was. But when I got to the club, it blew me away. And the physicality of his game and how hard he attacks the contest. And he's played, it'd be pretty close to 300 games of AFL footy now. And there's no surprise that he's a little sore every now and then. So hopefully this up and down sort of scenario he's been dealing with over the last 18 months, he can come out the other side of it and get back to his best.
So you're 9 games in or 10 games into the season now. The byes aren't too far away. How is your body at the moment, just sort of making it about you rather than everybody else? Are you ready for a break? Because games are played a little bit differently this year to previously. There seems to be a bit more flow to the game and so forth.
I certainly will be enjoying a week off. It's amazing. I was chatting to someone the other day and talking about how the game's changed so much since I've entered the game to now, but how much it's probably changed in the last 3 or 4 years, probably off the back of Richmond, and teams were trying to find a way to beat them. And it now feels like a lot of football is played at such a high intensity, and it's all about trying to get the ball forward as quick as possible. So as an offence, you talk about how quick you want to move the ball, for example, and the speed you got to run at that. But on the other side of it, defensively, it's so much harder. If you're involved in the play, sometimes the ball moves so quickly that it's no point even running because it's already gone. But when you've got to go, you've really got to go. So I've found, just in my game purely, that my K's haven't gone up, for example, but my high-intensity running and just intensity efforts around the ball has skyrocketed over the last probably 2 or 3 years.
Sorry, Huff, that's interesting because I was watching you quite closely on Saturday and there was a phase in the game where it just wasn't going to your side of the ground. And that sort of emphasises what you're saying a little bit, that it was like you were just sort of standing there in the middle of the centre square and it just wasn't going down your side. But then there was another phase where the ball just was going exactly where you were all the time. It's the game's being played very differently to what perhaps was the case 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, it is. And teams within that are playing differently as well. But I think how players are coached now and players are so good at executing their role that some days it's purely just not your day. Mm. might be a little bit different at the moment if you're playing at Melbourne and they're getting the numbers they're getting. But, yeah, it's funny. Footy's changed. And I feel like the product, we're certainly getting more scoring and more goals and things like that. But I feel like footy's exciting again in that sense that teams are taking it on, and whether they're 2, 3, 4 goals down, St Kilda against us, they took it on through the middle of the ground last week and they ended up winning the game because they had maybe not the constitution, but they had the awareness that if they don't take it on or they don't sort of make the game that how they want it to be played, then they're not going to win. So I think that's good for football.
Is a 2:30 grand final start time good for football? You've been there. There was a suggestion, Steve, I took it to the bank last week, that it was going to be a twilight grand final. Is a 2:30 start the best time for a grand final?
Obviously the AFL deem it to be, but
from a play perspective,
personal opinion, half would be, who cares what time the grand final is, as long as we're getting the best entertainment on and off the field. So I think I'm a big believer in pushing it back. So I feel like twilight or night football gives you the best spectacle. And I think we want to produce the best spectacle in Australian sports. So that would be me. But I have no idea of the statistics or anything behind it. So I'll leave that to others. But I'm certainly not a traditionalist in that sense. My view with football always is that it's no longer a sport and it's entertainment and we've got to provide the best product.
Well, that's a nice little zinger to finish. Nice work. And that's the why we get you on the Inner Sanctum, because you take us deep into the mind of the current day player. A very special player at that.
Yes. Now, we're going to chat to Matthew Head, a former AFL umpire, shortly. Now, you've been pretty big on the fact that you've liked the crackdown on dissent and so forth this year. Are you still in that camp?
Yeah, I think if the rules are due catered to how we were educated in the pre-season, then it's a good rule in the sense that we get the game moving and we're not getting held up because players are having a tantrum. So that's about all I'll say, Whitey.
Well, I think you've answered that very well. We can sort of take it from there.
We can take it from there, and we'll continue the conversation after the break with Matty Head. But we appreciate your time, Isaac. Well done on the weekend. And enjoy Barrel Club this week, and we can't wait to see a few more barrels against the Crows. 1:45 GMHBA Stadium this Saturday afternoon coming. Go get them.
Thanks, Al. Thanks, Whitey. Enjoy your fitness regime, bud.
Yeah, I'm sure I will.
Isaac Smith with us from the Cats in the Inner Sanctum.